Welcome to Shortcut to Sunday. I'm Ben.
I'm Bruce.
And this is your podcast for January 14th, 2024, the second Sunday after the Epiphany in Year B. And we are coming to you not live on behalf of Holy Family Episcopal Church in Fishers, Indiana. And Bruce, how are you today?
I am fine. Thank you very much.
Ah, excellent. Yes. Would you?
I'm just using an NPR voice.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you want to do an NPR voice? We have to get closer to our microphones if we're going to do it.
The following symphony was quite famous.
I found it very well done. And the conductor is what came from the Siberian, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, which is not true. I don't think I can.
Since that's a rock band.
I think I can only go with that joke for like maybe a minute or two.
Well, I'm sure eventually I'd start channeling the classic Saturday Night Live bits.
Oh, yes. The SNL skit name that you are not going to say on this podcast because, but yeah, what was his name? Pete Schwede, I think is his name. Pete or Charles. I don't remember.
First name. Doesn't matter.
Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
Deadpan delivery. Yeah. Fantastic.
Fantastic.
What was that? What was her name? Anna Gasteyer. Because the whole thing is deadpan.
Yes.
So, which is a rarity for a comedy skit. Usually you have the straight man and the,
and the clown.
And the clown. And in that one, it was just... Everybody was the straight man.
Yeah.
Anyways, all right. So
reel you back in.
Reel me back in. So wanted to point out this is the second Sunday after the Epiphany. And so there's 5 Sundays involved the Epiphany. And then second, third, fourth, and fifth, and then Transfiguration Sunday. So I just wanted to take a brief moment to talk about the season. Because it's not multiple epiphanies, essentially.
Yes, it is.
Is it?
Yeah.
I thought it was the same epiphany, kind of similar to the way of like the Book of Revelations is the same revelation in.
Well, yes.
Multiple in ways. This is like the epiphany, the same epiphany through multiple
experiences.
Avenues. Yeah.
Yeah. That it's, yes, in that way, it's a single epiphany. And what we'll have each Sunday is a different way in which Jesus revealed who he was to usually a different group than we had heard about before during this particular season of Epiphany.
Okay, yeah. And for those of you at home who are like me and would have to do a quick Google search just to make sure I'm clear as to what the word Epiphany means, it's your aha moment. I get it now. Yeah.
Yeah, or whoa, that's different.
Yeah.
But I did notice.
Right. A sudden recognition and understanding.
Not necessarily understanding.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. I shouldn't use that.
That's part of the fun of these Gospels is clueless apostles.
Luckily, we're not clueless at all. Level-headed.
Hindsight is 2020.
Yes, exactly. Or 2024, as it were.
Oh!
It's a 7-week long season.
Mm-hmm.
It starts off with the Sunday that we just had, which is with the Magi coming to
actually we cheated.
Did we?
The Magi arrive on the Feast of the Epiphany, which is always January 6th. Parishes have permission to shift that to the closest Sunday, which we chose to do.
Mm-hmm.
So January 7th, we celebrated the arrival of the Magi and therefore skipped the baptism of Jesus.
How dare we?
Well, in part because we had it twice during Advent this past year. Mm. So within weeks, we've had quite a bit of meditation and reflection on Jesus' baptism, on who John the Baptist was, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the days that are expressly carved out on the lectionary website here. And so you have the Epiphany of the Lord, which was the 6th, mm-hmm. and as you so clearly admitted to, you cheated. Then the I don't know, is it a feast day? The baptism of the Lord is what was earmarked for this past Sunday, the actual day. And now this coming Sunday is the second Sunday after the Epiphany. So which is it? Which is the Epiphany? Is it the Magi story or is it the baptism story?
The Magi story, because the baptism was the first Sunday after Epiphany, after the Epiphany. So that will never appear this year on one of our Sunday bulletins.
Well, there you go. Well, so since we're skipping it, for our listeners, Jesus got baptized.
Yes. And it went well.
And it went well. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some would say the gifts really well.
The gifts he had already got.
Right.
So no more gold.
You know, it's fair to spend a moment on this. The differences between the baptism stories.
Oh boy, so many.
Yeah, there are, but let's hit a couple. Like right,
okay.
The look of panic because he didn't prep for this at all.
Right.
And I don't know which one is which. So I'll throw out a little bit of like what I know. There's the story where John the Baptist does the actual baptism. And baptizes Jesus, and the dove comes down and voice from heaven says, "This is my son in whom I'm well pleased." I believe there's a gospel that doesn't have the story at all.
The Gospel of John refers to Jesus being baptized, but never actually describes it.
Right. Okay. That's the one, which actually I'm kind of surprised at because, since John, one of John's focuses in his gospel writing is to divert attention from John the Baptist. So it would seem logical that John's would include the baptism story and would expressly say, like, it was John the Baptist who was lesser than and by way of this story. Or would that have potentially given a little, maybe too much credence to John the Baptist then as a result?
What happened in terms of what's in the Gospel of John is John the Baptist does the "I'm not worthy" mm-hmm. for like the third time, I think.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And
classic storytelling rule of three.
Yeah.
Making sure you
and
get
says,
the point.
Man, I saw the Spirit descend as a dove from heaven and remain on him. I myself did not know him, but he who sent me to baptize with water said to me, yada, yada, yada.
Oh, so it does kind of have a third person baptism story.
Yeah.
It comes from John the Baptist.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Who,
you know, as strong as you can say, man, I had no idea
right.
what was happening. I was so unworthy to be there, but it happened.
Now you're giving me the my brain is putting like Garth from Wayne's World onto John the Baptist's body. We're not worthy.
I have thought that many times seeing that movie.
Hey, how's it going? Well, just a little meek John the Baptist.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna eat my locusts and honey now.
Locust, anyone? There's plenty. I got enough to share.
I don't know why he's Garth and not Wayne. Why didn't my brain go Wayne? That would be the boisterous one. It would make more sense for John the Baptist. Anyways, go ahead.
Just going to say, there's in the other three Gospels,
mm-hmm.
it does say John baptized Jesus.
Do they all? I feel like there was one where it just says, and Jesus was baptized.
That's the John.
Oh, is that just? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
And Matthew makes a big deal about it.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, of course, it's two sentences. And Luke's just about the same as Mark.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And
do Mark and Luke have the dove and voice from heaven portion, or is it just more of a mention of, hey, went down to the water and got baptized?
In Mark, only Jesus sees the dove.
Oh, interesting.
In Luke and Matthew, the crowd does.
Gotcha.
No, in Matthew, the it's not a physical dove. It's the Spirit of God descending like a dove.
Like a dove. Gotcha. Gotcha. Right?
But the voice of heaven is heard by the crowd saying, this is my beloved son. And it's not clear in Mark if anyone else can hear it, but it implies that only Jesus could.
That would be interesting. Just in just thinking character arc wise for Jesus, it'd be interesting if his baptism was his epiphany,
right?
The realization of like, oh,
now it begins.
Yeah,
yeah.
You are my son, in whom I'm well pleased.
Oh, that explains so much. Could be, and certainly in Mark, that's strongly implied.
Cool. That would be cool.
In Luke, because there's the story of Jesus being left behind in the temple at age 12, saying, that's my father's house. Where do you think I would be? There's a lot more interpretation that Mary and Joseph clued Jesus in before he was 12, which was
age of maturity. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Very cool. All right. Well, that's what we skipped. We won't go further because we've got other stuff to get to.
Yeah, so much stuff.
This day in church history, which is the 14th of January. Our first event comes from 1236. Death of Saint Sava from pneumonia in Bulgaria. He had become ill after participating in a ceremony known as Blessing of the Waters. From being a monk, he had risen to become Archbishop of Serbia. So this is his...
Well, and just so anyone...
Saint's Day.
Anyone wants to know, he must have died very quickly from... Because Epiphany, January 6th, is the day when the Blessing of the Waters takes place in the Orthodox tradition. And
it's a very cold day in Bulgaria.
Yes.
So maybe bless it from the shoreline and don't go in? I'm not sure what happened.
Maybe because of this occurrence, the current traditions are the clergy person, whether it's a bishop or a priest, tosses a metal cross into the water and people dive in to find it because it's metal, it sinks, and whoever comes up with it supposedly is cleansed of any evil that may inhabit them. Which is why that's not really necessary.
And so when they die of pneumonia later, that's because they had so much evil in them their body couldn't function anymore. Interesting.
Yeah.
I am struck.
It's like when a bad tenant moves out of an apartment, takes all the light fixtures.
Yeah, exactly.
Evil spirits, we'll take the heart.
The other thing that I find interesting, that maybe I just need a regular reminder of from a medical standpoint, is 1236, we know he died of pneumonia, which means that we're better at some medical things for longer than I think. Like in my head, it's like the Dark Ages were like 100 years ago.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it was like bleaches and bloodletting until
World War II.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm young and I'm stupid and we don't learn things in history class. But the fact that almost 800 years ago, they knew what pneumonia was. Yeah. Like that's all right. Look at Dark Ages. You knew some stuff.
And it was a very, very common way to die before penicillin came along, which was roughly World War I.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Boy, haven't we only had penicillin that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. 1331, death in, I don't know where this is, Udine of, where might that be? I'm not sure where Udine is. Of Odric, a Franciscan who had traveled to China and reported on the Far East, but whose credibility was low because he reported many details on hearsay.
Poor guy. He's poor guy that we're remembering him hundreds of years later as a gossip.
Yeah, literally. Okay, Udine is a city in northeastern Italy. Okay. So a Franciscan, I'm assuming monk.
Yeah.
Traveled to China and reported on.
Yes, Franciscan is a friar and was rather than a monk.
Okay, friar. Gotcha. And was a bit of a gossip.
Yeah. What an odd entry.
Yeah, I know, right? He has his own book. The authority of the date comes from a book titled Odoric of Podernon. He's got a known.
Soon all to right. be part of the Marvel Universe because right, they're right. scraping bottom.
Goodness. 1528, Anabaptist preacher Lenhard Scheimer, jeez, is beheaded and burned in Austria. Dreading death, he strengthens himself with the thought, if I did not place all my confidence in the Lord, I would fall. But the Lord is my comfort and my confidence. He forsakes none who trust in him. During his ministry, he had made about 70 converts in Rattenburg. In prison, he had written letters that were held in high regard by other Anabaptists. But, a lot of people dying on this day.
Yeah.
Interesting. 1529, Juan Valdez publishes his Dialogue, the title of his publication, giving rise to the Valdesians of Spain. His emphasis on faith and religious feeling, as well as disregard of ecclesiastical authority, paves the way in Spain for Protestant ideas, but forces him to flee the Inquisition.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Have to do that.
When you publish pieces that the Inquisition doesn't like,
yeah, you better expect it.
Yeah, better expect it. Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition except for Juan Valdez.
Yes.
You should expect it.
He was smart enough to know what was going to come down the road.
Yeah. 1610, 44 ministers, mostly from the province of Holland, sign a remonstrance that expresses their objections to certain Calvinist teachings of the State Church of the Netherlands. What's a remonstrance? It's got a capital R to it.
I do not know, so please do Google.
Secure search through Google. A forcefully reproachful protest.
What? Okay, say it again.
Remonstrance.
Okay. I'm just thinking about... Okay. What could be the English connected word zipped out of my brain.
Well, to use it in a sentence, because Google Dictionary does, despite angry remonstrances from residents, the board had already confirmed the planner's approval of two other projects.
Yeah, someone's going to use it in that context.
Receive my angry remonstrance! Yes.
If I knew what you were saying, I'd have you thrown out.
1623, another death mark, but not as violent as the last one, it doesn't seem. Death of Father Parti Sarpi. Interesting.
Poor guy.
A Venetian polymath and doctor of theology. He had assisted Venice in its struggles against the papacy and wrote a history of the Council of Trent that exposed misdeeds of the Pope.
Oops.
All while still a member of the Augustinian Servite Order.
So he was in a religious order, which meant he was in under another level of supervision and discipline, as well as the chain of command heading down from the Pope.
So
he could be double whammied.
Yeah.
So, okay, he's someone who died?
Yes. It doesn't have any details of his death, so I'm assuming... of relative old age or natural causes.
Yeah.
1639, adoption of the Fundamental Orders of Connecticut, the first written constitution known to history that specifies the power of government. It is largely the work of clergyman Thomas Hooker.
Thomas Hooker. Mm-hmm. In England, there's Richard Hooker. That's why, no idea if they're related.
The Hooker family line.
Yeah. Very, very bright people.
1643, another. We have so many. Oh, my gosh. It's almost all deaths today.
I'll brace myself.
1639. No, I just did that one. 1643, death in England of John Boyce, one of the translators of the Authorized Version of the Bible and a key editor of it. He had also assisted with an edition of John Chrysostom's writings.
Very good.
Significantly, he had been able to read the Hebrew Bible at age 5 and taught Greek at Cambridge for 10 years. So
he was one of the translators of the King James Bible, is how mm-hmm. we often call it now.
Yep. 1753, death in Oxford, England of George Berkeley. Uh-huh. Years earlier, as newlyweds, he and his wife had attempted mission work in America, but left when financial backing failed. After his return to England, he had gained fame for a theory of vision and for his philosophical system of idealism, which held that familiar objects were ideas in the mind and did not exist outside of our perception.
And which is very connected with ancient Greek philosophy.
Yeah. Huh.
And kind of silly.
Well, just to be clear. An interesting thought, though, you know? Yeah. An interesting way of thinking of things. 1841. Death in Cheshire, Massachusetts. Cheshire, Massachusetts, of Baptist evangelist John Leland, who, in addition to his evangelistic work, had been an ardent opponent of slavery and a strong advocate for religious liberty.
Well, that's good.
1892, death in London, England, of Cardinal Henry Manning, who had been a leader in the Oxford movement for reforming the Church of England before transferring his allegiance to the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah, Oxford movement is what helped transform the Episcopal Church to having weekly Eucharist.
Oh, okay. Okay. Theme continues.
Okay.
1915, death in Oxford, England, of Richard Mew Benson, the principal founder of the Society of St. John the Evangelist, an Anglican form of monasticism.
Yeah.
1953. Death in Ashfield, New South Wales, of Robert J.H. McGowan, Australian minister, Bible scholar.
Australian?
Australian.
I was going to say, that's what a great Scottish name.
I went back to double check that it wasn't Austrian. But it's Australian. Australian minister, Bible scholar, conservative theologian, and moderator of the General Presbyterian Assembly for New South Wales, Robert J.H. McGowan.
Huh. And he died in Scotland?
New South Wales. Yeah.
I thought that was in Australia.
That is in Australia.
Oh, well.
Right? Isn't it?
New South Wales, I think. Yes.
Yeah.
It's Australia.
Yeah. Southeast.
Yeah.
Yep. 1983. Death in Taiwan.
People are still dying?
Oh, it's like, it's the only entries. I'm not kidding. Death in Asheville. Death in Taiwan of Lillian Dixon, founder of the Mustard Seed, an interdenominational mission agency that engaged in relief aid, public health, and Christian education.
I'm old enough that I remember that.
1985, death in Ecuador of Dr. Manuel Nala. Yeah, the first. I will butcher this. Quechua. Maybe.
I think you got it.
Quechua Indian, to become a medical doctor. A Christian, he was known for his self-sacrificing life and soul-winning efforts. 2003, death of Sifo Mnube, a South African evangelist who had once been an alcoholic, drug addict, and thief. Many had come to Christ through his humility and charitable efforts. And finally, 2018, death of Silas Owiti, founder of Kenya's The Voice of Salvation and Healing Church International. So only one of those was violent, as far as we could tell. And only one of those might have been avoidable.
Yeah.
The death of pneumonia maybe could have been,
at least put off for a couple
of
years.
Do the church service inside.
Yeah.
Anyways, so that is... a lot of death in January.
Well, and not just in January.
And I would adventure, I guess, actually, probably more of those entries might have been pneumonia based.
Yeah.
I mean, wintertime was a killer
back then.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was,
except for the ones that were in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
That'd be summertime.
Yeah. You're right. You're right. So not the New South Wales,
yeah.
J.H. McGowan, Alexander McGowan.
However, there is something we can all take from this.
Okay. And that is?
Do not die in this date if you want your death noticed in a list of Christians who died.
Yeah.
It's just too crowded.
We're full up.
Yeah. Yeah. No one will ever get that far into the list.
No more individualized sainthood right. left available on this day.
That's right.
So there you go. Luckily, I do not plan on being that level of saint. Let's go to our first reading
Alrighty. Of the day.
1 Samuel chapter 3, verses 1 through 10, and then optionally 11 through 20. I always take the option.
Mm-hmm.
Now the boy Samuel was ministering to the Lord under Eli. The word of the Lord was rare in those days. Visions were not widespread. At that time, Eli, whose eyesight had begun to grow dim so that he could not see, was lying down in his room. The lamp of God had not yet gone out, and Samuel was lying down in the temple of the Lord where the ark of God was. Then the Lord called, "Samuel, Samuel," and he said, "Here I am," and ran to Eli. And said, "Here I am, for you called me." But he said, "I did not call you. Lie down again." So he went and lay down. The Lord called again, "Samuel." Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." But he said, "I did not call, my son. Lie down again." Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, and the word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. The Lord called Samuel again a third time. And he got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." Then Eli perceived that the Lord was calling the boy. Therefore Eli said to Samuel, "Go, lie down, and if he calls you, you shall say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.'" So Samuel went and lay down in his place. Now the Lord came and stood there, calling as before, "Samuel, Samuel." And Samuel said, "Speak, for your servant is listening." Then the Lord said to Samuel, "See, I am about to do something in Israel that will make both ears of anyone who hears it of it tingle. On that day I will fulfill against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house from beginning to end. For I have told him that I am about to punish his house forever for the iniquity that he knew, because his sons were blaspheming God, and he did not restrain them. Therefore I swear to the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be expiated by sacrifice or offering forever." Samuel lay there until morning. Then he opened the doors of the house of the Lord. Samuel was afraid to tell the vision to Eli. But Eli called Samuel and said, "Samuel, my son." He said, "Here I am." Eli said, "What was it that he told you? Do not hide it from me. May God do so to you, and more also, if you hide anything from me of all that he told you." So Samuel told him everything and hid nothing from him. Then he said, "It is the Lord. Let him do what seems good to him." As Samuel grew up, the Lord was with him and let none of his words fall to the ground. And all Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, knew that Samuel was a trustworthy prophet of the Lord. So, this is setup material for the rest of the first book of Samuel. Here's the groundwork as to why this guy is important, and later, why the book is titled in his name.
Yes.
So.
And yeah, it's the origin story for one of the top prophets in the Bible.
Yeah.
He'll be a major player in many of the key events of Saul and David's reigns as king of Israel, with Nathan replacing him most of the time with David.
Mm, gotcha. I find it interesting, this entry at the beginning of middle of verse 1. The word of the Lord was rare in those days. Visions were not widespread.
Yeah.
And you think back on early, I'm saying in quotation marks, earlier books of the Old Testament, more foundational word of mouth stories that were then later written down. Yeah, there's a lot of visions in those stories.
Right.
So it does kind of give us some context for a period of time that I think we can relate to. Word of the Lord is rare and visions are not widespread. Like, we don't hear those kind of things anymore. I don't know if they still happen and that people just keep it to themselves, or do we just write it off as crazy folks? Because lots of people claim to have visions while, you know, they're yelling on a street corner. But
well, and that's part of what, okay, in like the Elijah stories of the false prophets versus Elijah, where, you know, there are gazillions of prophets prophesizing stuff that the king likes.
Mm-hmm.
And Elijah's like, no, not so much. Today, Episcopalians especially probably aren't very aware that within the particularly Pentecostal Christian world in America, there are for-profit prophets.
No. You mean people would bend the arm of religion to benefit themselves financially?
Hard to believe, isn't it?
That, you know, what does the world come to? that never's happened before.
Oh, au contraire. Yeah, it happened. You know, it's been happening basically since the symbolic story of Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
Where Adam and Eve are like, yeah, we can do better. But we'll pretend that this is God stuff.
Right.
But yeah, these prophets for profit, they change what they are prophesizing, what they're proclaiming, to up their clicks and therefore the ads. And therefore their income.
Yeah.
And we're absolutely blown out of the water when Trump was not reelected, because a lot of them made big bucks off of prophesizing the reelection of Trump and declaring him God's chosen one and all.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's the same old in that way.
Yeah, we all make a buck.
But anyway, there are genuine... there are people who generally do in this day and age have visions and hear the voice of God, usually more figuratively than literally.
Mm-hmm.
And like in the books of the prophets in the Bible, usually it's not a lifetime experience. It's usually a couple times and then that's it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had I was honored to be in the relative orbit of somebody who has received something I would deem similar.
Uh-huh.
Being an individual who ended up being called to become a priest. Uh-huh. And it wasn't, you know, this Samuel call. It was more of the nagging in the back of of their mind of like, but who knows.
But to skip to the punchline here, that I've always been reassured by this story.
Mm-hmm.
Where even the great Samuel was getting it wrong.
Yeah
And even the notorious Eli could set him on the right path.
Yeah,
that he wasn't... Eli wasn't all bad. And
yeah, you kind of get the feeling like Eli made a mistake and recognized it and was still doing good work. And
I don't know if he's still... well, maybe not.
Maybe not? Okay.
Because he was a prophet for profit.
Okay.
And so the big 180 was when he realized... there's a good possibility that Samuel actually is getting something genuine here, that he swallowed his pride and his prophets and gave Samuel the guidance.
Yeah.
And then the punchline is, yeah, God's really ticked off at you, Eli.
Yeah, but it kind of implies like that was already covered. Like he knew. Like
He knew what he was. Yeah, he knew that he was not fulfilling his role and responsibility.
Because it feels like God tells Samuel, like, he already knows all this. He knows I'm going to punish him. So, I don't know. Do we get that earlier in chapter 1 or 2? Like, do we have the conversation between God and Eli where God's like, hey, dude, done messed up.
Yeah.
And no amount of sacrifices are going to atone for it.
And it's quite a list. of what he's doing wrong in what chapter is this? Chapter 2, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he knew. He knew.
Yeah.
I like this phrasing about describing Samuel not letting any of his words fall to the ground. Kind of describing like this dude was honest.
Yeah.
And maybe even like reading between the lines, like I know people like this, and I actually really like people like this, but like almost abrasively direct. You know what I mean?
They're helpful to have around.
Yeah. And that it's like, you know, people who don't pull punches.
Yeah.
If that's Samuel, I like that. I like this dude. Because, you know, you never are unsure as to where you stand with folks like that.
Yes.
they're gonna let you know. Like, hey, dude, not cool. Oh, really? Like, yeah, not cool. I'm gonna remember that for a while too.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
And again, Samuel has stiff competition from prophets like Eli who mm-hmm. are lying to further their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so So Samuel, as it says, I guess, is that part of the reading? Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
That people trust Samuel because he's telling the truth.
Yeah.
And isn't going to say things just to please people to up his offerings.
Yeah. Yeah. The character arc for this boy is kind of interesting in that, just in this story. He hears this information from God. He's afraid to tell Eli. Totally relatable. I would be terrified to be like, yeah, no,
you're right.
Yeah, this is gonna happen. And I would say it does imply that his level of honesty gets forged in mm-hmm. this story by Eli.
Yeah.
That Eli gives him one of his defining characteristics of like, no, no, no. Don't hold anything back. Be truthful. That's the most important thing.
Yep.
I mean, it's a little threatening of like, hey, you already, you know, whatever God told you, I hope it happens double to you if you hold anything back. I'm like, oh God, well, I really don't want what you're
doing. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, it's a classic Hebrew curse.
Yeah. Yeah. So may it be done to you, you know, twice, threefold. Yep. I think that's interesting that if Eli is a prophet for profit and not someone to look up to, that it's still that character still provides direction at the beginning of the mm-hmm. story in order to hear God's message and gives him the direction and courage to develop this characteristic, which is, as you pointed out when I asked you to tell me a little bit about Samuel, maybe even the defining characteristic of himself, of like, honest Sam. That's mm-hmm. that's who we know him as.
Yeah. Years ago when I was in college, I took a task to read the Bible in order front to back.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a lot of sloggy parts,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
I can remember thinking, ooh, Samuel's coming back. Cause I knew it was going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Well-written, exciting.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to make sure that point was made though, that while Eli is not a figure that you're supposed to look up to,
Yeah.
He is incredibly helpful to Samuel. And not in a, hey, just don't be like this guy kind of right. way. He was formative.
Yeah.
And instructional. It's, and we all have people that, you know, that in our lives we write off as, hey, yeah, not a good influence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just don't take anything from that guy. Like, no, I mean, actually there's, you know, even people that you're not supposed to look up, that you shouldn't look up to and don't have good qualities, you know, by and large, can be helpfully informative and personal and for your life.
And be part of God's motion through your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the Eli, yeah, he had been terrible for years and years. But yeah, this he saw this opportunity and was willing to say yes to God. I will do this stuff with Samuel to set him off on the right track. And some of it was the do as I say, not as I did.
Yeah. Yeah. Learn from my mistakes.
Yeah. Because no one's all good. No one's all bad.
Yeah, exactly. I would be remiss if we didn't spend a little bit of time to chuckle over the viewpoint of this story, because you like to put yourself in different shoes.
Yeah.
In the shoes of Samuel, we've done that. The shoes of Eli, we've done that. Shoes of God.
Samuel!
Kind of a funny story. Yeah. You can see it. I think I've made the joke in years past from the way of like God chuckling about it and be like, look, see what he's going to do? Samuel! Yeah. Skitters off into the other room. I'm going to do it again. Watch. But like, is God in this situation going like, hey, is this thing on?
Yeah, that's what I picture.
Do we have power? Have you tried unplugging it and plugging it back in? Samuel, can this kid hear me?
Doesn't he speak Hebrew?
What's he doing? I don't sound anything like Eli. What's the matter? Or is he impersonating Eli?
Yeah.
And that goes back to the mischievous God story. Like, Samuel. See how I did that? I threw my voice, made it sound like it was a. Yeah, I do like the vision of that, like snickering, like just holding back a laugh. God in this scenario. So, anyways, just for the chuckle, shall we move on?
Yes.
Okay. Psalm 139. 1 through 6 and 13 through 16. Oh, we're holding back some verses. O Lord, you have searched me and know me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from far away. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, O Lord, you know it completely. You hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is so high that I cannot attain it. For it was you who formed my inward parts. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works that I know very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes beheld my unformed substance. In your book were written all the days that were formed for me, when none of them as yet existed. How weighty to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. I try to count them. They are more than the sand. I come to the end. I am still with you. What do we know about this psalm?
Well, I got to admit, I'm doing a quick scan of a commentary on it, and I don't see a date yet. Okay, here's a great sentence, though.
Oh, okay, please, lay it on me.
The Hebrew is marred by a number of obscurities and corruptions.
Obscurities, I get. What kind of corruptions?
Well, that means that it was literally copied poorly.
Okay.
Everything was handwritten, including copies.
Huh.
Which means there's some ambiguity about what some of the Hebrew words may be.
Okay. So, in other words, utilization of a lot of context clues here to
translate,
develop the translation. Okay.
Okay. And because of those various factors and others, It's thought to come from the time of Jeremiah.
Okay.
Or second Isaiah. So as the exile is ending.
Gotcha. So the record keeping would have been a little bit more difficult to maintain during the trip back to.
But also land. That experience of being in exile shifted theology.
Mm, okay.
And that's expressed here.
Yeah. What's the part that we skip, 7 through 12? Is it just kind of repetitive as far as, oh, how vast and infinite is your knowledge? The part of the psalm prayer that I imagine God kind of like eyes his glaze over.
I've heard this so many times.
What's the joke from, is it Monty Python or is it one of the others? Stop that, stop that, stop groveling. I can't stand that.
It's pretty much just a repetition of what has come before. Though it has a couple of famous lines, like verse 12 is, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is as bright as the day, for darkness is as light to you.
Mm-hmm.
I think we might use that during Holy Week, but I'm not sure.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
We're glad you approve.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Hey, Episcopal Church, approved. Like it. I really like it. I'm fascinated by the way that this ends.
Okay.
The end line is interesting. Because all of this is talking about the omnipresence of God. Mm-hmm. How vast God is, the knowledge, my tiny little brain can't possibly understand.
Yeah.
And then this line is this the end of the psalm?
No.
Okay. Because it feels like
it should have been, though.
Yeah. It feels such an interesting line to throw in there, since it's, as you pointed out, not the end. Because, I don't know, it's like a left turn for me. I come to the end. I am still with you. Because this is, you read these words. This is this psalm, which I'm interpreting more as a prayer, as far, like.
Sort of.
Because it really.
It's a psalm. It's a prayer and also a vision quest.
Okay. Yeah. No. But it's a very personal writing.
Yes.
This is definitely not congregational as far as tone. Not to say that it couldn't be done that way.
It would have been read in a congregation or sung. But yeah, it wasn't the processional hymn that some of them clearly are.
This is definitely more of a personal description.
Yeah.
And the personal side of it is, maybe I would use the word belittling. Humble. It's a very humble. Clearly, the personal side of it isn't like I'm the focus of this. It's really like I'm not. This is an I'm not worthy psalm.
Yes.
So to have this line of I am still with you is kind of like a left turn for me in that, like, we're praising, in this psalm, we're praising God and how vast and unknowable God is. And then we have this very personal, and I'm still with you, buddy. You know what I mean? Like, you are so big, so vast. I am so nothing, but I'm here for you. Like,
well, I think it would make more sense if we had included the verses we're skipping.
Oh, okay.
Because they reinforce the, where can I flee from you? If I wanted to.
That would make more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, then we'll treat, maybe we'll treat this reading, the psalm reading, as its own microcosm.
Yeah.
That we've kind of created.
Yeah.
Which is how art works. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So as we'll read it, it does kind of, it kind of artificially creates this camaraderie to, I don't know. It'd be like the mouse to the lion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And being like, whatever you need, buddy, I'm here for you. Thanks, little mouse. I don't know as if I need you, but
yeah, that you're right on. And
okay. Whatever I can do, just let me know.
I don't think I can do the mouse voice at the moment.
Well, then you could play the lion.
No, I need the mouse voice for verse 21.
Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with a perfect hatred. I count them my enemies. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my thoughts. See if there is any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting.
Such a humble and zealous mouse.
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
arm me with the breastplate of righteousness.
And whether, yeah, I was trying to figure out how to talk about these verses, and that mouse thing is the perfect way to do it, because it's just ridiculous that a human's saying this.
Yeah, in a way, yeah.
You know, it's like, God's like, yeah, I can handle those guys.
No, I'll do it. Because I hate them perfectly.
Task me, O Lord.
I hate them with perfect hatred.
You're a mouse.
Yeah. Thank you, kind mouse. That won't be necessary, though. A lot of famous lines too.
Yes.
In here that we should pay some attention to. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. As you pointed out, yeah. You know, even the darkness is light to you. That which we didn't read. It is interesting though that one line talks about being knit in my mother's womb, and then two phrases later, intricately woven in the depths of the earth.
Yeah.
That's not the womb. Well, where were you born? My frame was not hidden. Is he an Uruk-hai from Lord of the Rings?
Or worse, never mind. I'm not going to go down another tangent. Well, part of that is, this is poetry.
Yeah.
It's not a biology lesson.
I don't know if you know this, Bruce, but sometimes I say things just to have the fun of them.
Yeah, and to help me out. And so, the biggest reason I say that is these verses have inaccurately been taken as proof of why God would hate abortion at any stage.
Gotcha.
And now, you know, that's not what this is about.
Are you sure?
I'm willing completely to be sure of that.
Let's try consulting the weighty thoughts of God.
I'm trying to see where.
Yes.
Oh, there it is. I'm trying to see the earth
word. Oh, yeah. Sorry, that's 15. And
yeah, and it is in Hebrew of the earth.
Okay.
Hey. Oh, interesting. And it's not just the earth, it's the whole earth. So it really is it's not one individual. It's all of creation.
Okay.
That God's getting credit for here.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting.
And it can also mean people of the land.
It would be maybe that'll be our next the next time we go through these kind of verses, we just do go from the translation and talk about the difference there. It's so rich as far as like could also be read this way or talk about this. Podcast 3.0.
Well, I gotta admit, I developed my respect for the biblical languages from the professor Vicki Garvey, who is here for my celebration of new ministry, and she is so multilingual. She can stand there with an ancient, republished Hebrew text and read from it, translating on the fly.
Yeah, I'm not built that way.
Me neither.
People actually, like that are impressive.
After I graduated and I'd go visit her, you know, I'd be, hey, let's go get a cup of coffee. And she'd say, no, no, I got to get ready for class. And she would, at that point, go through, write out what she thinks it said, look up every word that might be in doubt. So it's the old thing of she made it look like it was spontaneous, even though she had put 3 hours into translating that one psalm.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah.
Still. That's like those public translators who can carry on the conversation between two people and like talk to the person, understand the information, relay the question, hear the answer, relay the answer. Like just, I don't know.
It's amazing.
I don't know how you do that. That's crazy. Anyways, let's move on to something else amazing.
Okay.
Our gospel reading for the day.
Of course.
John chapter 1, verse 43 through 51. The next day, Jesus decided to go to Galilee. He found Philip and said to him, follow me. Now, Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, we have found him, what about whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote. Jesus, son of Joseph, from Nazareth. Nathanael said to him, can anything good come out of Nazareth? Philip said to him, come and see. When Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him and said of him, here is truly an Israelite in whom there is no deceit. Nathanael asked him, where did you get to know me? Jesus answered, I saw you under the fig tree before Philip called you. Nathanael replied, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. Jesus answered, do you believe because I told you that I saw you under the fig tree? You will see greater things than these. And he said to him, very truly, I tell you, you will see heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. So, I think this is the only time we get this story. I think the story only appears in John.
Correct.
I remember me a fig tree when it appears in the story, and this is the only one. So just to be clear, it's not that Jesus had good eyesight and saw him sitting under the fig tree in the distance. The reason why this is impressive is because he was nowhere near.
We don't
reportedly.
Know.
Well, it's the turn for Nathanael. He's like, hey, dude, how'd you know? Oh, you all right. You must be the son of the Son of God.
Well, yeah, that's part of it.
I mean, if he only walked 15 feet, and he wouldn't be very impressed by this.
Was that who was in the bush?
I saw you sitting under the fig tree. Well, no duh, it's right over there.
Yeah, so there it does.
It does imply.
It does imply a supernatural aspect to it.
Yeah.
And so there's been loads of sermons written about how Nathanael was praying under the fig tree, and some sermons, which they have a right to do, go so far as say he was praying about when is the Messiah coming, oh God, when, and then here comes a guy saying, hey, heard your prayer.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good way to think about it. What about this dunk that Nathanael does on Nazareth?
Oh.
Where does this come from?
Well.
Is Nazareth like knowingly, like is this the city of thieves at this point? Or like what's the deal?
We aren't, okay. There's loads of speculation. Some comes just from these verses. So it's totally speculative. Nazareth still exists. It's one of the towns that has survived through the centuries. So it's easy to see why people might look down on it because it is distant from Jerusalem. Also, people look down on it because it was in a region that was much more controlled and influenced by Romans than Jerusalem was.
That might make some sense then. Oh, you mean the folks that are sellouts. In tight with the sellouts. Yeah.
I just want to check one thing.
Yeah, so this isn't like their field hockey rivals or anything like that. You know? No. You know, it's my goal just to make you chuckle about something ridiculous.
Yes. I enjoy making you happy. The interesting thing, though, is this is the closest John comes mm-hmm. to an infancy story.
Okay.
This is the first time Nazareth's talked about in the Gospel of John, mm-hmm. but it's like, okay, y'all know Jesus was born in Nazareth, right? Okay, then I'll tell you this story about Nathaniel.
Gotcha.
In terms of the author of the Gospel of John.
I don't recall Nathaniel being too mentioned too much later on in right. later on stories.
Well, in John he is, but not in John he is, mm-hmm. but not in the other Gospels.
Okay. Interesting. Why does John, do we have any ideas as to why John focuses on Nathaniel?
All we can do is speculate, but that probably he was an evangelist with the community that produced this gospel.
Okay.
You know, you're something like,
so kind of like a hometown hero kind of a deal? Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Hey, he was good enough for Nathaniel.
Right.
You know?
Well, and again, sort of like you were saying about Eli, here's a story where Nathaniel insults Jesus to his face and kind of insults his mother.
Yeah.
And yet is still called to be an apostle.
Yeah. Yeah. He shares kind of a quality that we learned from the first reading applies to Samuel. Jesus says, just by seeing him, now here's truly an Israelite in whom there is no deceit. Like, yeah. This guy is going to be
plain punchy. Spoken.
Yeah, very, very direct.
I'm picturing Jesus pulling Peter aside and saying, you're going to have to take some stuff from this guy. He's not going to hold back.
Yeah, yeah. Keep this guy close. He'll keep you honest.
Yeah.
Anything else about this gospel reading?
Oh boy.
That you want to get into that won't be in your sermon.
Let's see. They did not shop at IKEA.
They. a reference to his most recent sermon. So please feel free to go to the YouTube channel and watch.
Yeah, there's. Because this call story of these two apostles occurs only in John, it's almost a fill in the blank story of where you can turn out really humorous, can turn out really tragic, because we really don't know a whole lot beyond what's in these eight verses.
Yeah. Okay. Well, very cool. Well, with that, I think we'll call to a close this your podcast for the second Sunday after the Epiphany in year B, January 14th, 2024. As always, we encourage you to join us in worship, however it works for your family, you and your family, 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock with the 10 o'clock service. That's in person, with the 10 o'clock service being broadcast on our YouTube channel, which I've just plugged.
Very skillfully done.
Oh, yes. So skillfully done. and then the 9 o'clock hour, we return to our educational hour at 9, and then we'll result back to the earlier joke and finish the podcast. Thank you so much for coming by, and it's been very exciting. Thank you so much.
My adrenaline's through the roof.
Seriously, my heart is racing. And until next week,
I feel like my kidneys are jumping.
Until next week. I'm Ben.
And I'm Bruce.
And we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.